New school nursing policy, nurse practitioners in the schools. We'll also take a look at an Army nurse recalling World War II nursing. And we're going to take a look at asthma and reactive airway disease. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. Of course, we have a lot going on in this episode, including our usual news and commentary and our tip of the week on asthma coming up a little bit later on in the show. But first, I want to thank all of you again for checking out the Nursing Show program, for visiting the Nursing Show website at nursingshow.com, and for really being active members in the Nursing Show community. You know, it's really valuable and important to me to have everybody out there contributing into the show with your comments, with links to news items and other things that you find interesting for me to check out. And it's what makes the Nursing Show, I think, one of the premier independent web TV and radio shows out there right now. And we're going to continue to build on that. So I want to thank everybody for doing that. If you'd like to get in touch with me and share any of those things with me, comments, suggestions, news links, and yes, corrections, definitely get those in here, and you can send those in by email to nursingshow@gmail.com. You can also always leave comments on any of the articles and show notes episode links over in the on the Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com, and of course, you'll find all of that available over there. Of course, there's links to everything we talk about in each and every episode over at nursingshow.com. Right there at the top of the page on the left-hand side, you'll see a link for show notes. Click on that and you can find the episode which you're looking for and go ahead and come in and check out the show, leave a comment, follow up on the links and additional information I provide for you there, and that's the best way for you to get back in touch with what's going on, contribute to the community effort here at the Nursing Show, and it's all appreciated. Jump on into this week's first news item, and this is an item that I picked up coming out of Wales in the UK, and it's looking at the Council of Nurses there implementing new standards and policies for school nurses. You know, this is something that is of huge importance to many communities, because in a lot of places in the UK, in the United States, and other parts of the world, nurses are primary care providers for many students in schools. They're the only regular health care provider that any of these kids see, and they are a valuable resource to provide these students with the additional health information they need for whatever stage of life they're in. And I think this is very important for us to keep in mind as we look at funding school nurse programs and really looking at how much we can impact our patients' lives, especially in situations where they're children. And that means children of all ages, from pre-K, toddler age, all the way up through teenagers and young adults. And it's very important. I know that the nurse in my college, when I was going to school there, a nurse practitioner that ran the health center in my small college, you know, she was a valuable resource, and I really came to look to her when I needed some medical assistance as a college-age student, and I think that that's something that we should all be keeping in mind. This particular article is looking at school health nursing as a primary policy priority for the Royal College of Nursing, and is something that they are going to be looking towards making sure that the school nurse can contribute very strongly to the overall health care and health needs of a whole community. And this is true. They can see what's going on in many parts of the community just because they are interacting with the children on a regular basis. And this is something that I really think we should encourage and look at what these types of programs are putting into place and see how we can implement more integrated programs for our school nurses, along with public health, along with our community health primary care providers, whether the nurses, physicians, whatever the case may be. All of these groups working closer together will overall improve the health of our total communities. Similar article I picked up in the next news story looks at using nurse practitioners in school situations. This is an article, let's see, I think I can figure out where I picked this one up. Looks like this is from Indianapolis, and this is a look at a nurse practitioner in Indianapolis working with children in a middle school setting and helping them to find out what's going on. A lot of these students come in, they are getting the whatever virus is running through the school system at any given time, and these students are able to come to the school nurse. The school nurse has a good picture of what's impacting the community. I know in my case, whenever something goes through the schools, my kids bring it home. Whenever my kids get something at home, they take it back to school with them. And so it's a good look at what's going on in the community. But so often, these nurses will find that there's nothing obviously wrong, and they may be able to do something like a rapid strep test in cases of severe sore throat. They may be able to do basic assessments, which is what we should be doing for any of our patients, and after doing that basic assessment, provide some kind of intervention in nursing care. And this might be giving a patient Tylenol just for achiness, and then getting them back into the school setting where they can be learning. I mean, this is an educational situation. So we have to make sure that we go ahead and provide full care. In some settings, a nurse practitioner, especially in urban settings or very rural settings where this may be the only primary care access these children have, a nurse practitioner might be a good way to go, because this nurse practitioner cannot just do basic assessment, basic care, but a nurse practitioner can actually provide them access to things when they need them, such as antibiotics and other necessary prescription or referral services. This is just, again, it shows the importance of school nursing programs and a different part of the world looking at the importance of school nursing. In this case, it looks like Indianapolis looking at the importance of having nurse practitioners in the schools assessing children and providing extended primary care for those kids. My final news item here is actually a really touching story, and I like to look at these types of things from time to time, not just new research, not just new care techniques or nurses that are doing so many great things right now. I think this next story is a great look at nurses over the years, and this particular article is a look at a nurse named Josephine Krawinski, and she is 89 years old at the time of this article's writing, and she was a U.S. Army nurse in World War II, served at the Battle of the Bulge, and basically was asked what she thought as she was part of a Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, a MASH unit, where she was treating these soldiers that were coming in with battlefield injuries, that were having issues with extreme cold in the wintertime without adequate equipment at this time frame during the Battle of the Bulge. What was her experience as an Army nurse like? Now, if you all remember, we had Lydia Cristobal on not too long ago, a couple months back, talking about her career in Army nursing now. But I think this article is a great look at just a historical look at Army nursing. One of her quotes that I really thought was just an amazing quote, she talks about her time serving in Korea and World War II, and she says, you know, when she had these patients come in, they were guys that needed care, and that's what they did. They provided care for their patients. You know, Army nurses, school nurses, whatever the case may be, I think it's important to look at stories like this and to look in our communities. Do we have a nurse that's retiring that has provided a broad amount of care to the community in a lot of different aspects? Do we have some nurse leaders that are moving on in their lives and we should be doing more to recognize them? I think it's important for us to educate the public about just how many different things nurses do to be involved in the healthcare aspects of their lives. I suspect that most of our public, most of our patients, have no idea of what kind of care and impact we have on their lives behind the scenes. And so it's important, I think, to bring out the nurse leaders as they retire or as they achieve goals and achieve new levels in healthcare, that we bring these individuals up and recognize them for their achievements and talk with them about what they've seen and what they've experienced in healthcare. These are things that we really can use to impact people's lives and to bring a lot about nursing to the forefront of the discussion on healthcare. We may also, along the way, inspire somebody else to become a nurse like us. If you'd like to find other stories like this, you can find them over at nursingshow.com. And again, you'll find that link in the top of the page in the show notes category when this episode's released. And you just find the episode you're looking for, click on that link, and you'll find links to these news articles or whatever article you're looking for linked right there in the show notes page for that episode. And again, you'll find all of that over at nursingshow.com. This week's tip of the week will be asthma and reactive airway disease in a review for nurses. We'll be talking about a couple of different things. What is asthma? We'll also be looking at the morbidity and mortality situation, in the U.S. at least, from the CDC. We'll cover, of course, signs and symptoms to review what's going on physiologically, what should we be looking for, how do we assess for patients with asthma, and also an overview of some of the basic treatments and medications that we should be looking for. And of course, finally, follow up with nursing considerations, some of the things you should keep in mind when you have a patient with an asthma attack or with asthma as a diagnosis, because this is a chronic illness and requires patient education, patient information to be updated as necessary. And so we should always be assessing and evaluating what patients understand about their disease. I mean, if someone has had asthma for a period of time, what's changed since the last time they talked to a healthcare professional? And it may be incumbent upon us to bring that information up for them. So what is asthma? Well, if you look at the disease as it's defined over at the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute, asthma is a chronic lung disease that causes inflammation, constriction in the small airways, and it's caused by a triggering allergen or event. It's an allergy kind of disease, but it can be triggered by events, not just a specific allergen such as pollen or cat dander or cigarette smoke or something like that. So it's unusual kind of allergic response, and that's why it's often lumped in to be called reactive airway disease, because it's not just an allergic reaction. What about the morbidity and mortality rates associated with asthma? Well, I found some most recent studies. Most recent numbers I found were 2009, basically looking at it's affecting over 16 million adults in the United States and over 7 million children, and those are those most recent numbers. But it's causing 13.3 million visits to doctors, nurse practitioners, and hospital visits every single year. It's a huge number. It is an ongoing issue and a huge cost to healthcare. And how much are we talking about here? Well, think about this. If someone is admitted to the hospital with an asthma attack, and of course not every one of those 13.3 million people are admitted, but when an asthma patient is admitted to the hospital, their average stay is 3.2 days. So when someone has to be hospitalized with asthma, it is a serious problem. They're often put on ventilators, they spend some time in ICU, and they have to be weaned off the ventilator after they get their airway constriction under control. It's a huge issue. Numbers from 2008, the most recent numbers for deaths, 3,613 deaths in 2008 associated with an asthma attack as its primary diagnosis. There's certainly a lot of people that are dying each year. When you compare it to other diseases and injury sources, certainly not as many as others, but doesn't mean that it's not something that we should pay attention to, because if a patient is having a severe asthma attack, it is a very real possibility that they could die or suffer some serious injury. I mean, if we cut off their oxygen supply for a period of time, they could experience disability associated with a long-term brain injury and brain damage. So we don't want to go that route. And so it's important to recognize and treat these patients aggressively and understand what's going on. So what are we looking at for signs and symptoms of asthma? Primarily cough, chest tightness, shortness of breath, wheezing on auscultation, and it may also be audible. So when you hear somebody say, I've got an asthma patient with audible wheezes, their airways are so constricted, you don't need to auscultate. you actually are hearing the wheezes audibly without any benefit of a stethoscope. And disappearing of wheezing is not always a good thing. I think this is something you need to keep in mind. As you're auscultating your patients and that audible wheeze goes away, you should listen very carefully, because what you may find is now they aren't even moving any air. Okay, the wheeze is an indication that at least some gas is being exchanged. Generally, asthma patients, asthma is caused by a constriction of the small air passages, the bronchioles. The perception or the trigger has caused a reaction of those airways. Those airways begin to have an inflammatory response and begin to constrict. The mucus there thickens up as well, and so they begin to trap air. They can get air in. Air rushes in when they take a breath, but as they go to exhale, the inflamed airways and the thickened mucus and everything else plugs up the air passages. And as it plugs those things up, it causes them to start trapping air. The absence of wheezing, therefore, could mean that they aren't moving any air anymore. And so you need to be aware of that fact and auscultate lung fields, because if you stop hearing audible wheezes, it could mean that they aren't moving any air and in fact are beginning to lose any kind of lung function. When you auscultate and there is an absence of breath sounds in all fields, that's probably what's going on there. So as these patients have a triggering event that causes them to have this onset of constriction and inflammation, that's something you need to keep track of. What are some of the triggers we're talking about? Well, there's a lot of things out there that trigger. And so it's not just our pet dander and things like that, but that can be part of it. So general allergens, respiratory irritants such as smoke, even strong odors have been known to trigger an asthma attack. Recent infection, including viral and bacterial infections, are also likely to be triggering events, and they've reduced the immune response because of the recent infection. Body's not as strong as it was to maintain, and so the immune system is a little down, and it starts reacting. And so we see patients that have recent infections that have a history of asthma, that recent infection can indeed be a trigger. Stress or anxiety, a stressful event. So if someone has asthma and they've recently gotten in a fight with their boss or their spouse, they could be the triggering event for these patients. Anything that causes them additional anxiety, maybe an upcoming event that they're dreading, maybe the public speaking event or an annual review with a boss, these things all can cause a precipitation of an asthma attack. Gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, is also another cause and something to keep in mind. And weather changes. Changes in the air pressure, changes in the amount of humidity in the air can all also be triggering events. And also meds or foods, certain things that might be causing some kind of a reaction could also trigger an asthma attack. So again, what does this tell you as a nurse? Good history taking is key. You have to be able to kind of be a detective, like so many things I talk about here, and really try to get to the basis of what's going on. Now, if someone has been diagnosed with asthma already, so this isn't the first time they're having this experience, you hopefully will be able to talk with them and find out what their triggers are, or talk with their family members. Based upon the severity of the incident at hand, you may be able to find out, and they may actually know what the triggering event was. If that is the case, we want to first off get them away from that event. We also want to ask them the big question, and I've asked this question, told you about this question in the past. What do you want to ask these patients? Think about it. You want to ask them this important question. When this happened to you the last time, what happened? Okay, and this is where they come in and they say, oh, well, the last time this happened, I had to be intubated and I spent 4 days in the hospital in the ICU on a ventilator. Okay, if you hear that from a patient, and we've talked about this in the past, talking about allergic reactions, you want to be prepared to do the same thing this time. You want to make sure you have respiratory standing by. If you're in a facility, if you're in a doctor's office or a clinic, you want to make sure that that patient is probably starting to think you need to get that patient to the emergency department. You might want to call 911, bring in the ambulance and the paramedics. They often will have the beta agonists, the albuterol, the Atrovent, epinephrine, and other treatments needed for a severe attack. And that might be the best option for transport if you're not close to the hospital and the patient. You don't think the patient should take themselves or somebody drive them directly there. So be prepared for asking that question. It's really important. Again, good patient history taking includes past history of the current illness. And in the case of any chronic illness, this is something that's flared up before. We want to know what to expect. What does this patient seen in the past? And that will give you a good indication of what's going on right now. This can be very frightening for these patients. In addition to the fact that the medications they take for this also can increase anxiety and agitation, it really becomes something very difficult for some people to deal with. And we need to be calming them. We need to be reassuring them and be a positive factor to encourage them that help is going to be arriving for them. And then be aggressive in our treatment. So what treatments are we talking about? Well, we need to recognize that we see an asthma attack and what we have when we got it. So a good assessment techniques, be able to auscultate, recognize wheezes in all lung fields. There's lots of sites. If you go out there and search for on the internet lung sounds, you will find lots of sites out there that will give you MP3 files, things you can listen to right there on the web to hear lung sounds of different types of things, and including wheezes. And if you need to, you can also look at the nursing show site. I think I've provided links to things like that in articles in the past, so you can follow up over there. And I have some additional links on other episodes. You'll have to search at the nursing show site, or just search in Google or some other search engine and use that to go ahead and find. What else? Well, we need to remove the presence of the trigger. So if something is causing them to have this problem, let's say you're a home health nurse, you're visiting them in their home. If their Aunt Sally came over with her cats and she's staying there for a couple of weeks and this patient's having an asthma attack because they're allergic to cat dander, guess what? You got to get the patient out of the house, and then you got to work on getting Aunt Sally somewhere else to stay, or maybe she can let her cat stay with a neighbor for a while. There's something you need to remove the triggering problem, or they're just going to have another asthma attack later on. Patients often have an acute therapy resource on them. These are their rescue inhalers, their albuterol inhalers, or sometimes a combination inhaler, such as an albuterol and an ipratropium or Atrovent inhaler. These provide them the immediate and midterm relief of their symptoms, hopefully. These are Atrovent in the case of albuterol, the patient, this is a beta agonist. It's a selective beta 2 agonist targeting most specifically the respiratory areas and causing bronchodilation. Hopefully that bronchodilation will help, but it doesn't always happen that way. But we need to be aware that this might be something that a patient needs. Bronchodilators and corticosteroids are acute therapies, and they will have rescue inhalers that may be used in this case. Long-term therapy, though, is needed, and especially for patients that have repeated chronic problems where it's not managed very well just with having a rescue inhaler. These patients may be taking long-term medications, including corticosteroids, anti-inflammatory medications, including some of the some lesser doses of medications that might be used as chemotherapy treatments, chemotherapeutic anti-inflammatory treatments. Long-acting beta agonist, and also a new class of drugs I've seen come out recently in the last few years. These are IgE inhibitors. They actually inhibit that IgE antibody to try to mediate the overblown immune response that causes the asthma reaction, the allergic reaction. So these are all some of the treatments and medications that patients might see. What are some of our nursing considerations? Things just to keep in mind as you think about asthma and your patients in the future. Well, first off, you need to know your assessment skills. You need to be comfortable assessing for a patient with asthma. And again, that just goes back to Making sure you're auscultating carefully in all lung fields, if you're doing that kind of an assessment, you should also be able to recognize either absence of air movement, which could indicate trapping in certain parts of the lungs, that air is already trapping there. Sounds of wheezing in other fields will be an indication that perhaps the wheezing higher up is an indication that air lower down has already been trapped, and that's why you're not hearing good breath movement in the bases. Also, education to the patients about their medications. They should understand that which of their medications is a rescue inhaler, which is the one that they should have with them all the time, so that if they have an attack when they're not close to home, they can pull that rescue inhaler out and use that to administer them the short-acting beta agonist to go ahead and deal with an immediate attack. And then also help them understand what the side effects of that medication are and things like that. So always educate our patients. They need to have the rescue inhalers with them, and they need to make sure that they keep them handy. For parents of children with asthma, this is something that, you know, the mom will probably have her purse, but if the parents, if the child is from a divided home, we need to make sure that there's an additional prescription so that there's a version of the rescue inhaler in the other parent's home, and that the child is taking the rescue inhaler with them. There probably will be a dose kept at school for these patients as well. All of these things are important to keep in mind. We also need to really work on developing a good patient relationship with these patients. If we're part of their primary care system, whether we're working in a physician's office, we're a nurse practitioner, whether we are part of the school nursing system, we need to work with developing a good relationship with this patient and help them understand long-term disease management, help them understand what changes have occurred, what new medications and treatment options are there out there, help them to find the resources they need to learn to treat themselves and deal with managing this disease. Many children that are diagnosed with asthma actually grow up and never have any other asthma symptoms the rest of their lives. However, in the cases of those adults and children that continue to have asthma all through their lives, this is something that we should be aware of, and we should be working hard to treat these patients and help them to understand their disease. Part of what that process will be to teach them to use a peak flow meter. This is one of the ways that asthma patients can see what kind of how broad spread the attack in their lungs is going on, what is the asthma attack like, and they know what their readings are normally on a peak flow meter, and they know how those readings change when they have an attack of different severities. By educating them on how to use this device and take it home with them and use it regularly, they can manage their own disease, and based on their peak flow device readings, they will be able to determine whether they need to call 911, whether they can call in their physician, whether the rescue inhaler will pull it off for them. And again, this all goes back to helping them take control of their disease. You know, giving them the power to understand what's going on and giving them the tools to recognize different things and not be afraid of their disease is one of the things we as nurses are uniquely suited to doing. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week, especially those of you that checked out the live Ustream recording of this episode. You got to watch me fumble around and change setups and things like that while I record the different segments of the show. I'm going to try to be doing that every week and record a live video version of the show that'll be put out about the day after the actual audio version is released. If you like what you see, you can check that out, and that'll show up over at nursingshow.com probably the day after the episode audio show notes are released, so you can find that there. You can also go, and I'll have a link up to that at nursingshow.tv. will take you directly to the video segments on the site. I want to also remind you, you can always send me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com. I've got too many email addresses rattling around in my head. But nursingshow@gmail.com, I return every email I get from my listeners and viewers. So you definitely want to catch up with me and send me an email. It might take me a day or two to get back to you, but I will respond, I promise you. Also, you can always leave a comment over at nursingshow.com in any of the articles there, over in the show notes for this and every other episode, and you'll find the links for the episode show notes right there at the top of the page. Don't forget to follow up on the information I provide here. You know, I go over there and put up links to places like the National Institutes of Health, Centers for Disease Control, and other credible sites to provide you the additional in-depth information for both you, and often those sites have great resources for patient education. So go over and follow up on those resources, dig into more depth. I cover something here for 10 or 15 minutes. Obviously, that's a review and an overview of something you're supposed to already have some understanding of. But certainly, if you want to get a deeper understanding or you really need to dig into it, it's your job to take that basic information I give you and really firm it up and understand how it applies to your nursing practice or your instructional guidelines if you're a student. In the meantime, I want to thank all of you. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic or twitter.com/podmedic. You can also find me over on the Nursing Show fan page. And again, that's facebook.com/nursingshow. And of course, I'm looking forward to seeing you all, checking in on Ustream. I will be checking in periodically in the chat room. I see Dr. Anonymous has showed up there in the chat room, so I will be checking in with him in just a second. In the meantime, I want to thank all of you for checking out the show. You know, we're going to wrap up with some music here on this episode, and you'll be able to hear it. I can't play it on Ustream yet. I haven't figured out how to do that. Maybe for next time. But this particular song is Lara Clapp's I'm Not Responsible. Played it here on the show in the past. One of my favorite songs of hers. There's a link in the show notes to follow up on her music, and also a link to purchase her songs over in iTunes. And I urge you to do that. Show your support for these individuals, these podcasters, that podcast artists that are supporting us, giving us great music to play on our shows. And so I urge you to check that out. And again, that's over in iTunes. You'll find the link in the show notes. So, you know, purchase a song. It's the cost of a cup of coffee or a soda, actually a cheap cup of coffee. But anyway, that's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want to remind all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Wrap your guilt around me when you don't get your way. And you bleed all this blame. Clean your cut, wrap it up, take care of your own pain. 'Cause it's you, not me, who's gonna set you free. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the time. And it's me, not you, that ends up feeling used. And I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not responsible. Why can't you let it go? Oh, yeah. 'Cause all that you're crying about happened 2 years ago or more. You hit rock bottom, now you're pacing its floor. But what I'm talking about, it's climbing now, well, no one's help but your own. 'Cause it's you, not me, who's gonna set you free. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the time. And it's me, not you, that ends up feeling used. And I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not responsible. Grow some backbone, stand up for yourself. 'Cause I ain't taking no more, and neither is no one else. Oh, 'cause it's you, not me, who's gonna set you free. And I'm sorry, but I don't have the time. And it's me, not you, that ends up feeling. And I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not so sorry. So it's you, not me, baby, but I'm not. I'm so sorry. Oh, oh, I'm so sorry, baby, but I'm not. Sorry, so sorry, baby, but I'm not. Sorry, baby, but I'm not responsible.